From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, March 17th, 2017. And on this day, a bill now in the legislature would prohibit keeping a list or registry of gun owners in Maine, but even its supporters say it goes too far. And how you can help make the Maine State Library's documents searchable. It involves the internet. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
First today, the Maine legislature is considering a bill that would prohibit the keeping of any kind of list or registry of gun owners in the state. The bill does have some backing, but as Mel Leary reports, even supporters say the current version goes too far.
The measure, as drafted, would ban the keeping of any list of Maine gun owners in any form, including any computer database or paper documents. Windham Republican Representative Patrick Corey introduced the measure.
The release of information about gun ownership has the potential for the discrimination, retaliation, harassment, and victimization of gun owners.
The legislation drew support from David Trahan, executive director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine. He says any registry of guns or gun owners must be very limited in scope so as to not improperly infringe on an individual's constitutional rights.
Article 1, Section 16 in the Second Amendment to the Constitution guarantee our rights to own firearms, and keeping a database on people who own those firearms only serves one purpose, to confiscate those firearms eventually.
But sponsor Patrick Corey told the Criminal Justice Committee that bill, as drafted, goes too far, and he offered an amendment that would allow law enforcement to keep lists of firearms involved in protection from abuse cases and of guns used in crimes. He also proposed removing language that would create an exemption to allow law enforcement to keep a list of firearms owned by those convicted of a violent crime or endangering a human life. Corey noted that the United States Supreme Court has ruled that there are self-incrimination problems with such lists. Nick Wilson of the Maine Gun Safety Coalition says there are other exemptions that need to preserve important lists that are already being maintained.
While we are not advocating for registry of law-abiding firearm owners, we cannot support this bill in its current form. Maine Public Safety and Wildlife Agencies maintain numerous firearm-related lists, many of which help Maine citizens exercise their Second Amendment rights.
Wilson says that if the bill goes forward, the committee should spend the time to identify all the existing gun lists that should be continued before enacting a blanket ban on all lists and registries. District Attorney Megan Maloney, who testified neither for nor against the bill on behalf of state prosecutors, asked the committee to consider this question.
What is the harm that's currently in place that the bill is intended to prevent, and the concern that it could actually cause more harm that's unintended?
Maloney warned that the bill could have the unintended consequence of making it more difficult for prosecutors who are dealing with crimes that involve guns. The committee will now consider amendments before sending the measure on to the full legislature. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The Maine State Archives and Library would like to make its trove of documents available for internet searches. But there's a problem with this laudable idea. Much of the oldest material in the collection is handwritten, like letters, diaries, even flyers. In order to make that searchable, someone has to transcribe all that content word by word. And as Erwin Gratz reports, that someone could be you.
If you want to make Adam Fisher of the Maine State Library chuckle, ask him how long it will take to turn all the handwritten documents in its possession into typewritten documents that a computer could search through.
You know, we just imaging the content will take many, many decades, with the technology we have now.
Fisher is director of collections development at the Maine State Library. Making an old letter or court record computer text searchable isn't difficult, but it means someone has to read it and type what they see into a computer. The more people who work on the project, the faster it will go. So the library and the Maine State Archives launched the Digital Maine Transcription Project earlier this month. They're inviting anyone with the interest, a computer, and some time to visit a website where they can read old documents and type in what they see. The information entered becomes what's called metadata that is computer searchable. Kristen Musinski is with the Secretary of State's office, which oversees the Maine State Archives.
Our archivists were inspired by the digitization transcription project that was done at the Smithsonian, that they had a really good response from the public for that, participation-wise, that helped get a lot of their documents transcribed, and they wanted to bring something like that to the state of Maine.
Musinski says this could be a boon to historians who contact the archives looking for records on a particular topic, event, or person of interest.
It can be a challenge sometimes to find exactly what you're looking for or to find everything that's related to what you're looking for that really creates a complete picture, because we do, you know, have documents going back to the beginning of the state.
Adam Fisher says digitizing records and making them available on the web creates new opportunities for ordinary folks to become historians. He tells this story of a woman who researched a relative, a former state official.
She got started on that when she was recovering from an illness and just had done a quick Google search and started finding things online that had been posted because it had been digitized at some point. And that inspired her to do some real digging, and she ultimately wrote a book.
Since the program's launch, over 100 people have signed up, transcribing more than 800 documents. They include Civil War hospital records, correspondence from the library's Dolive Ipcar collection, and town records. If you sign up, you can do as little or as much transcribing as you have time for. But the competitive-minded should be warned. They have now posted a transcription leaderboard, number one on the list, has racked up 295 edits. Erwin Gratz, Maine Public Radio News.
Every year, Francophonie Week in Maine recognizes French heritage and culture with films, discussions, and musical performances around the state. And as the week draws to a close, we are going to introduce you to a French sing-along group that stars a 92-year-old grandmother whose passion for singing and speaking French is more than a little infectious. Susan Sharon has our story.
Her name is Madeleine LeBlanc. She followed her father into the Androscoggin Mill in Lewiston at age 18. Made parachutes during the war, went on to work as a fancy stitcher in the shoe shops, and now cares for her younger brother as a home health aide. She'll turn 93 in June. And this song, made famous by Edith Piaf, is one of her favorites to sing.
Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose.
LeBlanc performs La Vie en Rose, translated as Life Through Rose-Tinted Glasses, as a member of the Lewiston-based sing-along group Les Troubadours. The 10 women are all Franco-Americans who grew up speaking French themselves. They regularly appear at USM's Lewiston-Auburn campus and at the Franco Center in Lewiston. This is the group at an impromptu rehearsal backstage.
On a tous dans le fond de son
Many of the songs are traditional Quebecois call-and-response songs that were passed along from generation to generation. That's how the words were learned. And the translation for this one, says Doris Bono, literally means the reasons why we sing songs.
Voilà pourquoi on chante des chansons. And it's basically that in the bottom of our hearts, all right, it gives us great joy. And that is why we sing songs.
Pianist Jeanette Gregoire is 85 years old and says she never learned to read music, but she taught herself to play by ear.
I've always tinkled on the piano since I was a little girl, and it's just up there in my head.
Have you gotten better with age?
Yes, she has.
I hope so.
Like other members of the group, Madeleine LeBlanc says she grew up singing French songs with her family. Her mother performed at music halls around Lewiston. And as she got older, LeBlanc found herself traveling to Montreal and Quebec to sing at Winter Carnival and huge snowshoe club gatherings that once rivaled the popularity of ice hockey in Canada. LeBlanc says her mother offered her some advice.
She told me, she said, when you sing, you're telling a story, so tell the story as you would like it to sound to the people. So that's the way I sing. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré.
Despite her cheerful disposition, LeBlanc says her own life hasn't always been rosy. Her first husband died of a heart attack at the age of 35. Her second husband left her for another woman after 23 years of marriage, and she outlived her third. But she has happy memories, and if you ask her to translate Edith Piaf's famous love song, this is what she says.
He promised me to be that I'd be his and he'd be mine for the rest of our lives. And
does it have a happy ending?
Yeah. Of course.
LeBlanc still sings in the choir in French at the Basilica of Saints Peter and Paul in Lewiston. French, after all, she says, is her first love. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Now, think about the huge stone buildings of France, like Notre Dame or the huge medieval castles. That stone had to come from somewhere, right? In fact, it came from huge underground quarries, some under what would become the battlefields of World War I. During that war, soldiers on both sides took advantage of those former quarries, and in the largest of them, they built what can only be called underground cities. They've since been largely forgotten. The quarries were an escape from the absolute horror of trench warfare, where a soldier could relax, go to church, maybe even visit a bakery. Photographer Jeff Guskey learned of the quarries while in France on another project, and he found some of the most prolific decorators of them were the men of the 26th Yankee Division, many from Maine. Guskey's search for those men's stories brought him to Maine, and that trip is documented in the film Americans Underground. I spoke with Guskey via Skype about the project and the scale of the underground cities.
I'm tall, almost 6'4", and I can walk in these spaces and not feel claustrophobic. They're huge. They're like subway stations, modern cities. And what I'm talking about are lights, telecommunications, rail, hospitals, food systems, ventilation systems, sanitation, offices, living quarters, theaters, chapels, synagogues. The works. I mean, some of these places are so big, there are street signs. And so what is so hard for us to get our arms around as modern people is that there would be something like this that could exist and not be on the internet, not be known. And yet it exists.
This is just totally fascinating stuff. And the visuals, which you can see on the web, are just amazing. But you say it also brings a sense of immediacy to something that does seem like a very long time ago.
World War I is remembered through old photographs and silent films, which make it seem ancient. And yet these were modern people fighting a modern war. There's just stuff everywhere. I mean, when the war ended, they wanted to go home. And so they left, uniforms and helmets, and there's live munitions everywhere, hand grenades and live shells and bullets, and they're you know, cooking implements and clocks and you just find tons of stuff.
And people didn't just leave their stuff. They also left their marks on the walls of the quarries.
On the walls of these cities, you see the inner life of these soldiers. You see expressions of their humanity. You see notes to loved ones and prayers, you know, to a higher power. And you see, you know, the emotion of missing home. And you see the love of America. And you see jokes. And you see sports scores. For example, the Red Sox were on a winning streak in 1918. And as we know now, the next year was the beginning of the curse of the Bambino, and they wouldn't win until modern times again. But these guys didn't know that. So in big, bold letters under a French farm field, the one I was visiting 2 weeks ago, you see Red Sox 7, Yanks 4. And that was a real game. And they were so proud of it.
That is fantastic. Another thing, though, that you found on the walls were symbols that you could not identify. You eventually determined they were made by members of the Passamaquoddy tribe from Maine. You knew there were 6 Passamaquoddy troops from Maine who'd served and been in the quarries, but the connection was not initially completely clear. How did you find out?
One of my team, who has proved to be an invaluable part of this project, Lieutenant Jonathan Bratton, who's the chief historian for the Maine National Guard, really smart guy. He knew that there were 9 Passamaquoddy young men who volunteered the week after we declared war, even though they were not citizens. They couldn't vote. They didn't have the same property rights. There were a whole list of things that they could not do because they weren't American citizens. But they loved America. They were devoted to their country. When he found out they were down there, he went up to the reservation in Point Pleasant, Maine, on the coast, and he wanted to find out if there were any families that he could talk to that were that had sons amongst this group that volunteered. And so he was talking to the tribal historian, and he just happened to have some of my photographs on his iPad. And he showed them to the tribal historian, and he was seeing something that none of us were seeing. Ancient tribal symbols dating back thousands of years that stood for peace and friendship. Maybe 4 or 5 of Native American carvings that, in fact, are Passamaquoddy. And we know that because of the symbols that they carved that were distinctly Passamaquoddy.
Jeff Guskey, thanks so much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And I also want to thank the people of Maine.
Americans Underground, Secret City of World War I airs tonight at 10 on the Smithsonian Channel. And you can find much more about this project by going to our website, mainepublic.org, and clicking on this story.